Do you have questions about American root work?
Have you ever heard of mojo bags or conditioning oils and haven't a clue what they do? Or perhaps just felt a call to conjure?
Well, grab a lamp and strike a light and follow us to the crossroads. I'm Dr. Hobb, a journeyman Memphis conjure doctor.
And I'm Silver Shadow, a Chicago area Strega witch beginning his journey into root work.
Welcome to Lamplighter Blues, shining a light at the crossroads of American hoodoo, conjure, and root work.
Don't put that thing on me, 'cause I'm going back to Tennessee.
All right, everyone, welcome back to the Lamplighter Blues. We have Alistair Hobb here with us.
Welcome back.
And today we wanted to talk about spiritual baths. Well, there's two things I wanted to talk about before we got into that. The first is, in our last episode, I had spoken about how I was pretty sure that people just didn't do all these down and dirty tricks. I was wrong.
I told you. You never listen.
Oh, my God. I don't know if it was the universe just trying to set me straight, or it's just bound to happen sooner or later. Whatever the case may be, they started coming out of the woodwork, and there are apparently crazy, evil magicians everywhere.
As long as these traditions have existed to heal or to help or to fix things, people have also been using them to mess each other up.
Right. So, I will 100% rescind what I had said previously. That happens all the time, apparently.
Well, to varying degrees, what you caught it was pretty heinous. But you'll find minor little things all the time.
I have yet to see the minor things now. Apparently now I am just knee-deep in hardcore brewery whammies.
Oh, well, you're just lucky that way.
Indeed. It's feast or famine in the Shadow household. So that and the interview with Conjure Manali was fantastic. We were able to grab him for a new segment that we are starting on the show called Secondhand Hoodoo.
For anyone listening to this show who may not be familiar with Shadow's other show, the full interview with Conjure Manali is available on the Pagan Rapport. That will not be for our show.
Right.
But he was kind enough to hang around and be the very first participant in our new segment.
Yes, and it is fantastic. It's so much fun. I can't wait to do a million more of these, tell you the truth. So,
and our new segment is called Secondhand Hoodoo. And this is, right now it is Shadow, though I'm going to attempt to take a swing at it too, wandering about and finding random objects and out-of-the-way places, and we figure out ways to use them in conjure work.
And now that I have gone into Ozark country, I have a bunch of weird crap for you.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yeah, but that being said, look forward to that at the end. Before we get into that, we are going to get on to spiritual bathing. So first I figured we would talk about where this possibly comes from, because there's a lot of different sources that people claim the rituals and things have originated from the Egyptians to the Hebrews and all kinds of stuff.
Okay, well, spiritual bathing is basically a fixture of every organized religion on the planet in one form or the other. And, of course, we've adopted it as spell work. We've adopted it as some of the first and sometimes some of the only work that people will do for themselves. But you'll find traditions of ritual bathing used in, of course, in Christian religions. The baptism is a principal mm-hmm. practice of spiritual bathing.
Christening as well.
Christening. Yeah, well, christening is, yeah, falls within the same purview. You'll have, within Hinduism, ritual bathing in rivers and sacred rivers. Jewish and Egyptian, like you mentioned, have a long history of religious bathing rites. Within Islamic culture, I don't know if it's universal within Islamic culture, but I believe it is, the idea that one cannot pray if one is not clean. So there's a certain rituals of bathing involved in that, so that one can approach God in a clean, in a spiritually and physically clean state. So this tradition goes a long way. And the traditions we use as far as in hoodoo, the idea of the pouring baths, which we'll discuss if my understanding is correct, mm-hmm. are almost purely African derivation. So you'll have this same concept that came straight in with the transatlantic slave trade, where most of our magic came from.
Well, I know when you're talking about the Baptists and things, as that's where my background is, that that bathing is huge. I mean, you know, people get baptized 5, 6, 7 times, and it's, you know, almost a cure-all of spiritual woes.
Yeah, that, you find that evolution in as the Protestant religions evolved. You had some traditions that, when you look at Amish country, say for instance, you'll hear Pennsylvania German, some Pennsylvania German Protestant religions refer to as Anabaptist or twice baptized or again baptized.
Mm.
And this was sort of a protest against the idea of Catholicism, the idea of child baptism, and the belief that until someone's old enough to make the decision for themselves, it wasn't a valid practice. What outsiders are called rebaptized or baptized again, but for them it was the first real baptism. So,
and that the church that I was at was very similar to that. It was strange, though, because they made that separation that you had to have a conscious choice to say this is what I want to do, but it didn't stop them from christening you and baptizing you and doing all these other things before you had that choice.
Right.
To almost lay over some type of protection for you, but you weren't right with God until you made that choice yourself.
Right. You'll even see practices such as in the modern Mormon church where they'll even do things like baptize dead people into the church after they've departed and make them Mormons posthumously.
I had no idea they did that.
Yeah, it's an interesting and much discussed practice.
Yeah, I bet. Wow. All right, well, so now you guys have a general idea of where this is coming from and you know, our particular roots for this being the African aspects of the pouring baths. So,
primarily, yes.
Yeah, right. Why might someone need to do a bath is the next good question.
Well, baths, like I said, are some of the earliest work people learn to do. It's one of the first things I learned how to do. And for the at-home practitioner, someone who may be doing work just for themselves or their family, especially for their children, loved ones, a bath can be used. It's a very principal cleansing, of course. Though spiritual baths are not intended to be a physical cleansing, they are a principal means of cleansing off cross conditions. They're a good means of cleansing off any kind of, say, spiritual rubbish or stain that one's accumulated. It can be used to draw things to you, to draw prosperity, to draw wealth, to draw love. I've seen spiritual baths used very, very effectively to help someone get past mild depression issues. I don't mean chronic type things. Like I said, and here's our universal caveat for spell work. We are not doctors. We are not psychiatrists. If you have serious issues,
go see those people.
Go see professionals who can help you with it. But these can be a good augmentation to things like that. For any kind of, they can be used for just about anything, to draw things to you or to drive things away. And that's the two principal ways that pouring baths are used.
Mm-hmm. And as you had said too, it's the primary, but now there's been a lot of, if I recall from Brazil, the sitting baths, where you sort of soak in those energies as you're laying into them.
Caribbean, more mostly, if I understand.
Oh, okay.
Yes, they are Afro-Caribbean practices. If I have my geography right, you will find some sitting baths that have been adopted into it. They're not purely traditional within hoodoo practice, but you are finding workers who are recommending them for clients, along with the more traditional pouring baths.
And that's something I think is kind of interesting to look at. In particular, when you talk about hoodoo, there's nothing that we do that allows you to just sort of sit there. You always have to be doing some kind of work.
It's that Protestant mindset, I think, they're going getting out and doing. I think so.
Yeah, but to me, that's what makes it so enjoying is the wrong word. It's satisfying, I guess, is the word I'll settle with. That when you're done with it, you actually feel like you've done something.
Yeah, feel like you've actually been involved in a thing. Yeah, that's right.
Right, and even in the spiritual bath, it becomes a huge process. It's not something that's. It is simple, but there's a lot that goes into it. That's sort of behind the scenes. That I think is just really cool, and I'm glad that this is something we were able to talk about really quick into our program, because it's something that will be prescribed constantly for people.
Well, mentioning that, we should probably go ahead and give a basic description of the simplest sort of bath ceremony.
Absolutely.
Right? The most straightforward bath ceremony, and we're not even talking about a specific recipe for the bath, but the most oft-prescribed methodology, one would arise before dawn, a good bit before dawn. A lot of the times, give yourself time.
I got stuff to do.
Well, this is a throwback to the way baths were prescribed. A lot of times when it would be prescribed, a person would come to a root doctor's house, you know, back in the day. They would receive their initial assessment or diagnoses, you know, the day before, whatever the issue or issues were. And then they would actually spend the night at the conjure doctor's house and arise early the next morning to take the bath. And life began with the sun. You go far enough back.
Mm-hmm.
One would arise, even modern practice, this still applies. Sorry, you have to get up to do these. You get up before dawn, well before dawn. Whatever herbs, if it's an herbal bath or a mineral bath, especially with herbal baths, you will bring them to boil in water, in a pot of water. Let that cool down enough that you're not going to harm yourself. But you will actually take that bath tea And of course, back in the day, you'd be in a in a galvanized tub or a wash basin of some kind,
usually on somebody's front lawn.
Yeah, if you're washing in the yard or if you had a room for it. But you would take this into the tub, and you still do this now in modern shower stalls, bathtubs, whatever. Mm-hmm. And you'll pour that bath tea over your head a prescribed number of times. While usually you'll have some kind of earnest prayer or one of the psalms accompanying the bath, depending on the purpose. If the bath is to drive away, then you would, once you pour over, you would scrub yourself from the neck down, pushing down from the face and neck down, and kind of drive it out through your feet. If you're trying to draw something in, you start at your feet and draw things up to you.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, once the bathing's done, the bath water would be collected. And in modern practice, of course, you can save enough of it to throw out. You save it in a bowl, or I use a pitcher a lot of the time because it's easier to handle. And you'll take it out, and we discussed this, I think, in a 101 episode about bathing, that a lot of people prescribe you throw it towards the rising sun, or that you throw it to the west instead if you're trying to get something away. Everybody does it a little bit different. For me, I was always told you throw it towards the rising sun, throw it towards the east. But once you step out between the bath, a lot of times you'll have candles lit on the edge of the tub. So as you step out of the tub, it's like walking through a sort of gate. You allow the bath to air dry on your skin. You don't towel dry. Put on clean clothes, and then dispose of your bath water.
Mm-hmm. And that's it in a nutshell.
They get more complicated, but that is the most common bathing methodology I've seen. I've heard mm-hmm. described, and I've prescribed for clients.
And there's a lot of different variations, kind of getting into it, that you'll see the candle colors will change. If you're trying to remove or cleanse yourself, then they'll be white. If you're, trying to bring about love, they'll be reds. You can change those. Some people dress the candle, some people don't.
Sure.
There's definitely a lot to it. Some people say, not to, or there's certain bath ritual that you would cast the remains into a crossroad, but there's some that you want to throw near your house. For instance, if it was love drawing, you would want that in and around your house so that the energy mm-hmm. knew kind of where to go to.
Yeah, and for a series on crossing baths, you see things like throwing it into a crossroad, like you said, throwing it against a strong tree, sort of like you do with an egg cleansing, to let the earth kind of reabsorb all that negativity, let the tree take it for you. And like you said, as far as stepping out with more complicated rituals, you'll see times when it calls for you, after you've dried, to anoint yourself with a conditioner oil or a sachet powder before you dress.
And that might be something to bring up, too, that in general, whenever you take any type of really deep cleansing, in the hoodoo tradition, we always try to put something back in.
Yeah, if you're leaving big holes in something, if you have you want to fill in those spaces, what you're driving away.
Yeah, that way, if someone has something else come after them, at least then they have almost like an added level of protection. You have to get rid of my good luck before you give me bad luck, type of thing.
Sure, and it just never hurts if you're doing some kind of thing to add a little bit extra step into it.
Right,
to augment.
And there's a million different things when it comes to conditioning oils that are really beneficial to have, so why not?
Oh, sure. Even something as simple as a Crown of Success, Crucible of Courage, any sort of thing, just general attraction type oil if you're using for a drawing. There's a lot of firewall protection I'm a big fan of. There's mm-hmm. there's no shortage of things to figure out how to use.
Right, and that, if you look at any catalog with conditioning oils, you'll find a ton of different things that you can grab, and if they're anointing oils or powders, the sachet powder is another thing that they would often do, where after you are completely air dried, and that's something we should talk about too, about why that is important, and after you were air dried, then they would dust you with sachet powders in order to solidify that effect if they didn't have oils.
The purpose of air drying was just to keep the essence of what you've done, the essence of the bath on your skin, especially in an herbal bath. You'll find that when you boil these herbs, a lot of times you're using dried herbs. Within purely African traditions, they tend to make these things out of fresh herbs that they'll macerate and then soak in water. But a lot of times in Hoodoo, we're working with dried herbs. So when you boil this tea, it's just like making tea. You're drawing a lot of the essence of this herbal matter, vegetable matter, out into the water. And so you're actually going to keep that on your skin. If you towel it off, of course, it's going to be on your towel. You're not going to mm-hmm. keep it on you. And you'd be surprised, first time you do one of these, how much of that will stay on your skin. You'll smell that off your skin all day, and it's interesting. It's a very, very interesting experience first time you take one.
Yeah, it's something to be said, too, about the concept of wiping it away as well. When you're brushing yourself off like that, it's the exact same thing that you did in the bath, but you had herbs to kind of meld in the difference.
Mm-hmm.
And so, keep that in mind. The air dry is really, really important.
It's like you said, there's a ritual aspect to it as well as practical, that you're not, symbolically, you don't want to wipe off the work you just did.
So that being said, is there anything else you'd like to add before we jump into formulary and different types?
No, I don't think so. What we gave was one of the simplest baths. That's a general purpose for any kind of herbal bath. Besides herbal baths, herbal baths aren't the only kind. There are also mineral baths that you'll find that are used pretty much the same way, just to kind of define things. Mineral baths, you'll find things that use bath salt, which is a combination usually of kosher or sea salt and Epsom salt. You'll find saltpeter used in baths a fair bit. And you'll find other ingredients, vinegar, ammonia. I'm sure I'm forgetting some principal things. Various colognes.
Saltpeter, I think.
Yeah, you know, saltpeter's, various colognes, Florida water, Hoyt's cologne, things like that we use. You'll find some old-time recipes that call for a shot of, say, whiskey. Within the Caribbean baths, you'll find rum. Down in Brazil, you'll find cachaça and things like that involved.
I have never heard of the use of actual alcohol. I need to apparently look at your recipe book.
Oh, we'll see. We'll discuss that.
Yeah.
besides general all-purpose sort of methodology, you have some very specific baths that probably came from indigenous sources, things like the Wahoo bath. The one I've prescribed a fair bit is black walnut bath, and that's a very specific methodology that you'll find that's used a fair bit. A black walnut bath is usually it can be used. I've seen it used successfully independently for a cut and clear purpose. It can also be used to augment a cut and clear spell. But a black walnut bath is a great way to begin removing yourself from a harmful relationship you want to leave behind. And it's fairly simple. You take 9 black walnuts, preferably wild ones that are still in their green sort of outer hull. And if they're fresh, you can just put them to your bath and do your bath water. And they will actually stain your bath water pretty thoroughly brown by themselves. If you're using supermarket black walnuts, you may have to boil them. You boil them for a while, let the water reduce, and you'll actually wind up with almost like a consomme where it's kind of thickened and heavy in the water because of what it secretes from the walnuts. And you'll use this the same way. And, of course, there's a certain spell method to it where you'll write the name of the person you want to leave behind and declare that's the last time you'll ever see their name, the last time you'll ever speak their name. And using this walnut bath, you can use that as a really good way to start a cut and clear to get someone out of your life.
Which is something, like you said, it comes up a lot. And it's actually something I've used a variation of it, mostly because the black walnuts weren't in season or I would have done that. To, you know, do what they say is to fall out of love. And sometimes you absolutely just have to have that. And I've had really good success with it.
Yeah, that can also be used not just to fall out of love. You can use it to remove yourself from any kind of relationship. I've heard people use it to remove themselves from the military. Someone was preparing to leave the military, and they used a black walnut bath to help facilitate that, to get themselves out of a harmful environment. I've seen people use it to get away from a harmful friendship that they were close with. So most commonly used for relationships, but it can be used for other things.
That I did not know. Learn all kinds of things in this show.
Yeah, funny how that works.
Is there any other type of specific bath? So the black walnut one is an excellent example that I wish I would have brought up.
Black walnut bath is a very, very particular one. There are lots of baths. There are many baths as there are workers. Every culture has its own sort of derivations. I'm no expert on spiritual bathing, so I'm sure there are ones I'm not acquainted with.
Right, but the nice thing about it is how easy it is to come up with these formulary in order to kind of get the results you want.
Oh, sure.
So that's something I thought was nice to kind of bring up, because when you have any kind of condition, almost the first thing out of a root worker's mouth is you should do spiritual baths before we do any other work.
Well, baths are so easy. They're so easy to fine-tune. They're easy to do. It's one of the simplest it's one of the simplest prescribed spells to explain to someone how to do. It's a relatively straightforward sort of thing. And it can open the door to so many things. Something as simple as taking a bath, of course, to begin more complicated spell work, candle work, altar work, anything else, or something like doing a prosperity bath and adding the bath water to your floor scrub, you know, and taking that to wash out the front step of your business or your home if you work out of your home or whatever. Mm-hmm. The bath is just such a simple and firm stepping stone to other work.
Yeah, and that bath water can be used for, the used bath water, that is, can be used for a lot of different works. Something that I've prescribed to folks to try to hold on to their property.
Yes.
So definitely a good thing if that's something that you're looking for, and you've gotten things like railroad ties in order to nail down your house. Yeah. Railroad spikes, rather, that are in the ties.
Yes. Railroad ties would be very cumbersome. So.
It'd be really hard to drive to the ground. You take these spikes, and you can actually almost dress them with that bathwater and other things, and then put them around your home with, you know, the right prayer and attention to really hold on to your property. It's sort of that animal marking its territory type of thing.
Yeah, and just the symbolic practice of nailing down what is yours.
Mm-hmm. It's really satisfying too. When I went around and seen people drive those spikes in, it just looks like they're having a damn good time.
Yeah. Well, we don't express ourselves enough these days.
Yeah.
Slightly more nefarious, but equally traditional. A woman can use her bathwater, just her regular bathwater, the same way she would use menstrual blood to tie a man to her.
Once again, I did not know that.
No, that's a practice I have heard of. I've not prescribed it. I've not been in that position, but I have seen it work. Where as far as getting a man to drink your bathwater is a good way to keep him home.
And that being said, when you're talking about getting him to drink the bathwater, it's a little bit, folks. Don't boil the noodles directly in that water.
No. You a few drops here in the coffee and the tea, something strong.
Yeah.
It's like I said, it's very similar to using menstrual blood, where you don't want to use a great deal of it.
You don't want your noodles to taste like dial.
No, that'd be off-putting, I suspect. Not that I've tried it, but I'm sure it wouldn't be
right. All right, well, did you want to get into some of the formulary?
Oh, we can. Starting with, let's say, one of the ones I'm familiar with. This is a sort of an old-timey one. This is a pouring bath, and it's for gambling luck. And you would actually make your bath water. And this is this one I would boil a little bit to get. You take a little bit of sugar, some cinnamon, and you would actually boil that together a little bit, or at least simmer it together to get the cinnamon extracted. And when it's cool, add in some Hoyt's cologne.
Mm.
And you don't want to boil the Hoyt's cologne because it's alcohol-based, and it'll just evaporate and be gone. So you want to take that off the heat, let it cool a little bit, add in your Hoyt's cologne. And again, you could pour that, and that'd be a good way to start your night, say, hitting the bingo hall or playing cards.
Gotcha. Well, yeah. Let's get the cinnamon to kind of spice up your hand and sugar to draw in all that good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Cinnamon and sugar are pretty classic for money drawing. And of course, Hoyt's cologne is sort of the go-to for gambling luck. And of course, after your bath, you could also anoint yourself with some Hoyt's cologne, which is an old timey practice for playing cards, especially, or anything that any kind of gambling prosperity Hoyt's cologne is good for.
And there's a lot of information out there in Hoyt's cologne, and it's strange the places that you'll see it.
Oh yeah, all over the place.
Yeah. So if this is something that's interesting to you, that you're looking for a lot of these things, it's amazing how many of these things you can find at, like, for instance, your grocery store or any other place that sells cologne and or laundry products.
Well, that any place that has a pretty strong Hispanic community, a good sized Hispanic community, you'll find Hoyt's cologne, you'll find Florida water, Kananga water, things like that. You just won't expect them. You walk in and go, oh, look at that, and it's just a cultural thing.
Well, do you want me to go into mine, or do you want to save mine for last?
Oh, you got that big beast of a thing, don't you?
I do.
Transitioning to talking about how easy they are to personalize.
Yeah.
When I first began practicing, when I first dedicated myself to practicing fully, when I decided to really get into the work, one of the first things I did was go to visit my father's grave. And my father is buried in Arkansas. Of course, I live in Tennessee. And I found out when I was preparing for this trip that within an hour's drive of where my father is buried, Aunt Caroline Dye is buried. Now, for anyone who's unfamiliar, Aunt Caroline Dye was probably one of the most respected seers and diviners on this side of the Mississippi. She lived in Newport, Arkansas. She was called Aunt Caroline Dye, they say, because she had no children of her own. She adopted a number of children. But she was very well known especially for finding livestock. And people would come from all over the country, including especially from Memphis to Newport, to visit this little lady in her house and to ask her help finding things they've lost, or to help them. And she's buried in a little country cemetery in Newport. So while preparing for this trip to visit my dad and to visit Aunt Caroline, I put together a little bath for the trip because it was going to be an all-day sort of thing. It's a good little ways from where I'm at to where I was going. And so for this bath, I got up again. I was leaving at sunrise anyway, so it worked out about right. I got up. And I had prepared the night before to make things simpler, so I wouldn't have to measure that early in the day. And that's something you can do to make it easier, is to boil your tea the night before. Just put it in the refrigerator. You can get out and heat it up the next morning instead of having to fuss with all the herbs that early in the day. And for that trip, what did I use? I used agrimony. Oh, that was terrible. Bearberry and something else. What did I use for that?
I know there's a couple that are specifically for travels, but they're escaping me at the moment, too.
Yeah, me too. That's terrible. But the simple fact of the matter is I was able to put together a bath for safe travel and to aid in connecting with good spirits, to amplify my, my not sterling mediumship. And it's just that simple to put together custom-built things.
Mm-hmm. And it's nice to be able to have that kind of flexibility that quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as you get into this practice and you really start looking at a lot of these herbs and things, you're going to go back to probably, you'll find, say, 20 that kind of fit a general purpose of the things that you want to do. And you'll just have those in the back of your head, and you can throw together stuff really fast.
Mm-hmm. For that math particularly, I basically just raided my working cabinet to see what I had on hand, and was able to put together a safe travel and sort of friendly spirits bath as one, and was able to start my day that way before I made that trip.
Go ahead.
No. another one that does stand out as far as, since we have been talking about traditional boring baths, one soaking bath I have prescribed and seen used successfully is Love Uncrossing. It's a cooling bath from Afro-Caribbean tradition. It is used when too much work has been done on a love situation. I prescribed this to a woman who had been steadily doing work to try to bring a lost lover back, and she had just heated the situation up so horribly with all the work she had been doing that it was just almost unsalvageable.
Wow.
So this I prescribed, and this is a sitting bath. This is a more traditional Caribbean sitting bath where you do soak in it. In her case, I have also seen it used in a pouring variety. I prescribed it as a pouring variety, and it worked as well. And it's very, very simple. It is just rose petals, violet leaves, and rue. And again, you cook it the same way, just boil it down the same way into your tea, and you can either add it to a tub of bath water and soak in it and pour it over, or dilute it pretty well in, a gallon of water, and use it more traditionally in a hoodoo way, pouring over the head and scrubbing downward to drive off sort of this accumulated heat. And I have seen that used a couple of times at this point, very, very successfully.
All right, that sounds good. Why the violet? That's one I can't place.
It's just a love. I mean, violet and rose petal both are love herbs. Hmm. So that's sort of setting the resonance for what the purpose of it is. Violet leaves are a prime example of the doctrine of signatures. Violet leaves are shaped like hearts and are a principal love herb.
Okay, because, you know, I got the rose, got the rue, but the violet, that's a new one on me. I guess I haven't really had a use for violet yet.
Yeah, anytime you're using rose petals, you can almost incorporate violet leaves as well. You can also candy violet flowers, say, for honey jars, and use them the same way for love spells.
Oh, so now that you mention that, I have heard of that, which is kind of strange, because that was one of those I don't want to call it a sneaky trick, but it sort of is, where you can candy rose petals and violet petals, and using that, you can kind of trick those as part of your delivery for your spell.
Absolutely. And going back to that, as far as slaying tricks, the Rhodes Romani, of course, the most universal of spiritual baths, the simplest, most straightforward, and very widely accepted is just the hyssop bath. You've used it successfully. I've used it successfully. I'm pretty sure anybody that's ever done spell work ever for any reason has probably used it at one time or the other. Hyssop goes back to the Bible, the 51st Psalm, which of course is the psalm you use for this bath, and it's a bath made just of hyssop. Make your bath tea of hyssop, use it as a pouring bath, and that's used to basically to cleanse one of sin. Anytime you do any kind of heavy work or any kind of crossing or any kind of nasty trick or any kind of trick in general, it's not a bad idea. Or if you've just accumulated too much sort of spiritual detritus from other people, a hyssop bath is a good way to drive that off.
It's one that I use more often than anything else, really.
Yeah, if you do a lot of work for clients, if you find yourself sensitive enough that you're picking up a lot of noise off of clients, that's a really good way to kind of ease that off.
Although the one that I do is also mixed with frankincense and sea salt.
Yeah.
As sort of a more purifying and reset you to normal, I guess.
Yeah, that's good. And it's a good. So again, the fun thing about bathing is that there are some traditionally prescribed baths that have been used successfully for a long, long time, and we have those available to us. But you can make adjustments based on personal knowledge. Though do some research. Make sure you know, understand the herbs you're using. Make sure what you're using to do this isn't toxic in some way for your skin. It isn't, you know, don't get dodgy with poisonous plants. If someone tried to incorporate too much sort of modern witchy type stuff into it, you wind up using something that might wind up being skin contact poison, and that's not a good idea.
Also, if you're ever going to use herbs in this fashion, skin test them first.
Wonderful idea. Take your bath, once you boil your tea, if you do something as simple as just dab it on your arm, just to make sure there's not a nasty reaction before you pour it over your entire body.
Yeah, that would be a very bad hospital visit.
Yeah, that'd probably be unpleasant.
Hard to explain, too, I imagine.
Yeah, and we use the word tea to designate the fact that we are boiling herbs to make it's not really a tea, it's a tisane. Tea has to have tea in it. But most of these you're not going to drink. And, you know, don't drink anything if you don't know what it does. If you don't understand the biology of the plant, don't drink it. It's just a bad idea.
Right.
You never know. There's some very, very good books to be looked into about the reactions of some of these plants. If they have reactions with, say, if you have kidney problems, heart troubles, you know, any kind of thing, you'd be amazed at how these plants can affect your blood sugar, how they can affect your blood pressure, how they can affect your digestion. Be aware. No, you don't want to something as simple as drinking something that's going to lock you in your bathroom for 6 days, or something that's going to send you to the hospital. So, yeah, when we say bath tea, we're just commenting on the fact that you're boiling the herbs in water.
Yeah, and it will take on an appearance much like tea, but don't drink it.
Yes, though I have heard Catherine Ironwood prescribe an old-timey method where one does make an herbal tea and drink it, and then get into their bathwater and pee into the bathwater.
Yes, I remember that was on Lucky Mojo.
Yes, I have heard that. Oh, that was way outside my realm of familiarity, but I have heard it prescribed, and apparently that was pretty traditional once upon a time.
Right, so to be cleansed both on the inside and out.
There you go. I have thus far not used that method.
Yeah, either have I, but, you know, that's one of those things that, you know, when you get to these, I don't want to say old-timey, but these, you know, like, really deeply serious practitioners, a lot of the stuff that they do seems kind of, you know, weird, and then after you've been around it for a while and you start really looking into it, you start figuring out why they do that, and you're just shocked.
I'll tell you, as my personal practice and study is extending out into more folk magic, especially American folk magic practices, even I, who am rapidly developing a reputation for being sort of hardcore, I'm surprised at how hardcore these guys were. These old workers meant business, and it's remarkable to me how tough and how practical they were.
Well, I wanted to offer up a couple of book ideas for people who are looking into this. There's two that come to mind. One is the big green book that's always a standby, which is the Hoodoo Herb and Rootwork Magic. You know, again, I guess we talk about Lucky Mojo and Catherine Ironwood a lot, but there's a really good reason for that. So definitely pick that book up. There's a ton of bath ideas in here. And if you want to put together your own bath, the way that, or how at least I choose my herbs is pretty much from that book.
Yeah, she's got some great tables of correspondence in there that kind of, the book is exhaustive. I mean, it discusses a lot of information, as botanical information as well as folk information about the herbs. There's a lot of bath recipes among many, many other things. And, of course, there's a nice reference in the back of the book breaking down the herbs listed by conditions that they're used for. And that makes making baths very, very easy.
And there's another that's called The Complete Book of Baths, and I am going to forget who it's by. I suppose we will just say look for the book, this complete book, Book of Baths. But it had a lot of recipes in it. It's something I don't own, unfortunately, so I don't have it in front of me. But it's something I've paged through, and there was a lot of good stuff in there. It's a big mixture, though. I mean, stuff from the neo-pagan movement, stuff from hoodoo, stuff from voodoo, stuff from, you know, all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Another book I'd recommend for anybody working with herbs at all, the Nichols Botanical Ready Reference. It's a little yellow book. You'll find it around. It was actually a handbook for pharmacists back when pharmacists still used plant matter to make drugs. And it's a good little reference. It breaks down and it gives you the medical qualities of, and it's not exhaustive in that it gives you a lot of information. It's mostly written in it's a condensed little book, so it gives you a lot of abbreviations and things. But it gives you a good idea of the medicinal uses of certain plants in that. Are they stomachs? Are they purgatives, you know, are they diuretics, things like that, and it can warn you if they're toxic as well. So that's a handy little book. Like I said, Nichols Botanical Ready Reference. It's just a little yellow handbook, and I'd recommend it for anybody that's working with herbs at all.
And it's, you know, almost Christmas time, so put that in the stocking of your favorite root worker.
There you go.
All right, so when we had thrown this show, or thrown this idea up, we decided that we were going to get together a couple of formulas for it. And so Dr. Hobb here had said he'd put together a couple of small ones. And I said, okay, I'll tackle the monster. So in general, you'll hear some of these baths referred to as 7-herb baths or 13-herb baths. And in general, these are sort of all-purpose. So I put together my own 13-herb bath that turned out to be specifically for uncrossing as I was going through here, trying to think of something that was cleansing. But it wasn't actually as hard to get the 13 as I had thought it would be. And in general, when you're talking about putting things together, 13 is usually your upper limit.
Yes, just for practicality's sake and nothing else. It starts getting a little, I mean, like, you'll see odd numbers mostly prescribed within hoodoo for things.
Right.
And there's lots of reasoning why. But like with the Mojo Hand, you know, 13, you sort of hit the limit because how much stuff can you cram in one little bag?
yeah.
With a bath, you get to 13 and you get to a point where you're starting to trip over yourself, where you got a lot of redundancy and things that's not really necessary.
Right. And that is something that I sort of discovered when I was doing this too. There's quite a few that are repeat, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But I'll run through the list real quick, just so if anyone really wants something this intensive, you can. And just to see, it's not something that Dr. Hobb here has been told yet, so we'll see what his reaction is. So we start with basil, which is a cleanser. I believe the saying is evil cannot be where basil has been. Salt, which is a universal kind of standard when you are doing baths. Sometimes they are, I guess most of the time, they say you should have at least one mineral in there. Salt is sort of a universal thing. It does what you tell it to do. In this case, it's used to, again, clear away the cross conditions. We have hyssop to kind of clear you off of whatever you may have done for the situation. Ammonia, which is a big, big-time cleanser, in my opinion, something that's sort of heavy-hitting. Marshmallow root, which I've never actually used. It seemed interesting. But once again, it's another cleanser.
Oh, Althea. That was the other ingredient in my bath. I couldn't remember earlier.
So, blackberry leaves, which is used to send the evil back. Broom straws, which is also used in Chinese wash in order to clear away bad conditions. And it's not actually the straw of a broom. It's actually a plant.
Right.
Sorghum tops, I believe, is what they're from.
Mm-hmm.
Calamus root, which is another cleanser. Dill leaf, yet again, a jinx breaker. Eucalyptus, which can clear away both as a general cleanser and as something of a personal to help you get past it, perhaps. Like an emotional cleanser, so to speak.
Yeah, also good for bad habits.
Yes, yes, with jasmine as well in that category, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Feverfew, which has a unique property to protect someone from accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the one I saw that I thought was particularly fun. Frankincense, which is another kind of universal thing that you can put into something just to make it stronger. In this case, I'm also using it as sort of a holy protection. And finally, lemongrass, which is another clear everything out and bring good things in. So that right there is your 13 herb bath.
That's heavy.
Yes, it is. But what bath would be without a good psalm to read with it? So I have chosen, as I went through a psalm book, and actually I had just gotten Anna Riva's The Power of the Psalms,
mm-hmm.
which, again, awesome book if you can get your hands on it. And it had sort of led me to this, but I sort of actually stumbled upon it, which is Psalm 9, in particular, verses 3 through 6. So if you give me a moment, I will read these to you so you can feel the kind of impact that they would have. When my enemies are turned back, they shall fall and perish at thy presence. For thou hast maintained my right and my cause. Thou sattest at the throne judging right. Thou hast rebuked the heathen. Thou hast destroyed the wicked. Thou hast put out their name for ever and ever. O thou enemy, destruction has come for perpetual end, and thou hast destroyed cities, and memorial is perished with them.
There you go.
So, as you can see, if you're trying to really crush someone's work that they've laid over you, you can find psalms in there that actually have that kind of deep impact of you don't have power here, I've removed your power, and I have, you know, spirit backing me to say that you can't do these bad things anymore.
Yeah, and that's sort of pushing on towards the best defense is a good offense type of uncrossing with that sort of weight behind it.
Yeah, well, actually, that's one of the reasons I had included blackberry in that recipe.
Right, the blackberry leaves. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because it does have a tendency to send nasty things back to the people who made them.
Yeah, the barbs are usually representative of that.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully that will, you know, cure what ails you.
It'll cure something, I dare say. And looking at less heavy, you look at that list for anyone listening to read through that list. You could cherry pick from that list and make a dozen other baths too for less weighty purposes. So
absolutely, basil and hyssop are the two that come to me the most.
Mm-hmm.
When you're trying to like just get any type of gunk off of you,
yep.
Just basil, salt, hyssop.
Yeah, basil within African concepts, basil has the tradition of being a cooling herb as well. So if you're trying to cleanse out something, that situation's become too hot, or if you're trying to do something like say a bath for your temper, or a bath for something that's getting out of hand, things like basil, coconut milk, cascaria, things like that can be used as well to cool something.
Absolutely. All right. Well, did you have anything else to add? Or
No, I think we've covered a lot. I think we've covered a lot of the fundamentals of bathing there. There's so much more to it. I mean, we're just kind of scratching the surface. It's a subject that deserves a lot of attention. It is a foundation, a fundamental practice, but without the foundations and fundamentals, we can grow no further. So it's absolutely something that should not be ignored. It's something that should be respected for what it is. And just the simple fact that it's a really, really easy way to do what needs doing.
Mm-hmm. And if it's if you're really thinking about getting into this work, start there.
Oh, yeah.
So with that, I think we will jump right into Secondhand Hoodoo then.
All right, our very first Secondhand Hoodoo segment. And, of course, we are very pleased to be joined by the inimitable Conjure Man Ali.
What we have today is, at least for our item, is a chess set that I had found at a Salvation Army around here. And it immediately brought up, you know, so much imagery in my mind when we were thinking about, you know, the types of objects that we would want for this particular segment. So with that in mind, and I think the only thing about this specific chess set is that a few pawns are missing, as board games are notoriously known for these things to be missing pieces. What could you do with in the Hoodoo tradition with a chess set? And we'll toss this to Conjurman Ali first.
Sure, there's lots of things that you can do. But what my mind goes to first and foremost is, of course, the tactical, strategic element of chess. I am a big fan of macro magic, magic that changes things on a big scale. For example, elections and presidential elections. I'm deeply involved in political magic and environmental magic, things like that.
Oh, all right.
With the Order of St. Cyprian. So what I would do with a chess set is I would baptize one or the other side as the side that I want to win. For example, in an election, it may be a president, a senator, whatever, and the other side would be a contender. And I would dress my side with power oil, dress my side with crown of success oil, and then dress the opposing side with confusion products, things like confusion oil, black arts. And then I would play a game of chess with myself and making sure that my side won. And what this can literally do is actually manifest or alter reality, where you are shaping the tactics that are being used, where you were nibbling away at the opponent while you were continuing to grow and move forward. And that would be probably the macro way of using a chess set in order to alter reality.
Wow. All right, then. I really didn't think about taking it to quite that scale, but definitely something to think about. Wow.
I aim big.
Apparently. All right, then. Dr. Hobb, you've had a few more minutes to think about this. Does anything come to mind?
Well, I have to be both pleased and apologetic that I went pretty much the exact same place that Conjurman Ali did with that one.
Good, we're thinking alike.
It seems to be, yeah. Within the same use, the same concept of use is what I came up with, basically, is as far as overcoming opposition, using it symbolically to arrange your opposition and to overcome. I think in that way you could also probably use it symbolically for road opening. Use it to establish sort of battle lines, to identify your enemies, your specific obstacles or enemies, and then again use it in the same way where you play to overcome those obstacles. And of course you could telescope it down into a more immediate sense if you had conflicts at your work, conflicts at home, things like that. I think you could use it to approach those obstacles as though they were enemies to be conquered.
Absolutely. And that kind of brings up the symbolic nature of what these pieces represent. So if you're having trouble at work, you know, you can sort of lay that trouble out with the different pieces, you know, your boss being a king and the other coworkers, you know, being pawns, or depending on their in a relationship with the boss, you know, you could trade out pieces. You know, this person seems to really have their ear and they're the front line for this guy. You know, every time someone brings up a problem, he jumps in. So that guy could become a rook, or, you know, something of that effect.
Mm-hmm.
What immediately appealed to me about having a chess set in this setting was that baseline symbolism that, you know, I could use it to elevate myself by taking this king piece and dressing it in things like master key oil, or taking the bishop and then using King Solomon's wisdom oil and things, and using it almost a totem, which is probably not the word I'm looking for, but, you know,
talismanic object.
Right, there you go. Talisman to really represent what I'm trying to get at. So, again, you know, it's interesting to see how many ways you can take one object and sort of rip it apart and go, okay, it's got all these pieces, how can we put it together, and how can we use it for all these different different processes.
Mm-hmm.
What strikes me as engaging the chessboard as far as a symbolic sort of field for overcoming issues or for solving problems or for confronting an obstacle is the way the different pieces move. You could symbolically engage those in that the way different ways you can approach an issue.
That's true.
The idea of your idea of like your oil as far as your idea of over, around, or through. You have more complicated pieces like the knight, mm-hmm. and the way they move, and the way they can bypass obstacles, or things like rooks. Even things like the idea of how a rook would capture en passant, where you would, as it passes a piece, it still captures. So mm-hmm. even just symbolically, the way the pieces move and the way the game itself functions, you could symbolically engage in the manner in which you approach obstacles.
Oh, absolutely. And I didn't think about that. If you had pieces like a knight that could just say, you're a problem, but this is my talisman to say, you're not a problem, I can move through you, I can move around you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, absolutely. You can. Sidestepping a problem.
Right. Yeah. So, wow. Well, does anyone else have any other ideas for the chessboard?
Well, chess ultimately is a game of King of the Hill. I mean, it's a combat game, so...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Really, if you're going to stick to the, I mean, you could use any symbol, you know, as a puppet or as a token or as a talisman. But if you're going to stay engaged with the fundamental idea of what you have with the chess set, that's really going to be, I think, what you're looking at is overcoming, is achieving victory or overcoming competition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And with the really inexpensive chess sets, speaking of puppets, you know, the bottoms of those are open.
Right, they're hollow pieces a lot of the time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. With a little felt covering the bottom,
right? So you can just pop that off, load it with whatever you need to.
Yeah.
If you're going to go so far as to baptize the piece, then you might as well load it first.
And with at that level, like what Conjurer Lee was saying, you could really enact a global scale sort of thing with pieces loaded and baptized that way.
We'll see that idea comes from an object that I do have in my house that is aimed for almost identical purpose. So it was not too far of a stretch for me.
Wow.
Brilliant happened a long time ago. I just found it out now. So I have an object which I call the Vessel of Dreams that allows me to alter reality in a very similar fashion on a macro level. So the idea is there, but going along the same thing with the chess is you can also create it as a center piece or an altar of wisdom and decision-making. If you're having a particularly difficult time, mm-hmm. Playing chess can actually help you. It can be a magical act. What you can do is you can, almost acting in the form of divination, is you can dress the entire thing with King Solomon's wisdom, clarity oil. You can smoke it with things like sage, Solomon's seal root, all aimed at helping to give you the mental acuity, the mental clarity needed in order to make a decision. When you're having a difficult time deciding on something, you can come and sit and play a game of chess and observe what's happening. And during that process, just by playing a game, the products will work on you to clear your mind, clear the fog of confusion, and help you come to a decision. Or watching the game, you might come upon strategies that will help you in that particular problem that you're dealing with. So it becomes a shrine to wisdom, so to speak.
Wow. I'm still stunned that you have something in your house that's of that exact type. Like, holy crap. Wow. All right, then. Well, barring anyone else having any other suggestions, I think that will do excellent for our first venture into secondhand hoodoo.